You are listening to This Week in Palestine, Truth and Justice Radio, WZBC, Boston College. Today is Sunday, August 16th, 2026. Before we step into this hour, a clear reminder for every listener joining us now. The perspectives you hear today belong solely to our hosts and guests. They rise from their lived experience, their research, and their commitment to speaking truth without hesitation. They do not represent the official views of WZBC, Boston College, or its Board of Trustees. In this space, nothing is softened, nothing is filtered, nothing is shaped to satisfy institutions or protect comfort. What you hear belongs to the people who speak it, fully, directly, and without apology. And with that clarity set firmly before us, we begin. This Week in Palestine is not a place where truth hesitates. It does not knock politely or wait for permission to enter. Here, truth steps forward with its spine straight, its voice unshaken, and its presence impossible to ignore. Urgency is not decoration in this space. It is the pulse behind every sentence, every report, every breath taken at this microphone. Clarity is not optional. It is the obligation we accept the moment we speak. And while our heart beats in Palestine, in the alleys of Jerusalem, in the camps of the West Bank, in the shattered streets of Gaza, our vision reaches far beyond the borders carved by occupation or diplomacy. Because the forces shaping Palestinian life do not stop at checkpoints or concrete walls. They move through parliaments, through corporate boardrooms, through the quiet corridors where powerful hands make decisions that ordinary people must live with. Wherever you are listening now, driving through the long hours of your shift, lifting your first cup of coffee into the morning light, or sitting in the stillness of your home, thank you for choosing to be here. I am your host and narrator, Arlene Russell. In this space, we do not file down the edges of truth to make it easier to swallow. We do not bend the story to comfort those who prefer silence. We do not dilute reality for anyone's convenience. Here, truth stands unfiltered. Resistance is not fury. It is breath. It is survival. Solidarity is not a slogan. It is a lineage carried from one generation to the next. The voices rising from occupied land do not tremble. They rise beside movements across the world demanding dignity, justice, and liberation. They remind us that struggle is never isolated. It is woven across borders, across histories, across the lives of people who refuse to surrender their humanity. This hour is not simply a broadcast. It is a lifeline, a thread stretching from Palestine to every corner of the globe, binding devastation to determination, binding grief to a future still worth reaching for. Even in the deepest darkness, the spark of defiance survives. Even when the world turns away, that spark refuses to die. Each week, we bring you reporting that cuts through distortion, analysis that refuses disguise, and reflections that center Palestinian life in all its depth, complexity, and unbroken courage. We speak with intention because the stakes demand nothing less. This Week in Palestine is not a refuge for polite silence. It is testimony. It is urgency. It is solidarity without hesitation. The struggle for freedom is shared. It crosses borders, and it remains sacred. Today, we ask a question that many avoid. How can Israel survive? Not in the military sense, not in the political sense, but in the deeper sense of legitimacy. Israel cannot survive surrounded by strong, independent nations because its foundation, as you accept the truth or not, which is built on a myth of a history that does not exist in the way it is told. The holy books speak of the people of Israel, not the land of Israel. And the people described in those ancient texts are not the same population that arrived from Europe and the West in the modern era. Perhaps a small thread of continuity exists, stretching back thousands of years, but not enough to justify the political narrative used today.
And so we return to the central idea. Israel's long-term strategy has been to create enemies out of its neighbors, to keep them weak, fractured, and dependent. Iraq shattered, Libya dismantled, Lebanon destabilized, Syria torn apart, and now pressure building toward Turkey, Egypt, and even Qatar, the small Gulf nation that has tried to remain neutral. Each conflict, each destabilization serves a purpose: to pull the United States into wars that reshape the region in Israel's favor.
For 20 years, Israel pushed Washington toward confrontation with Iran. Administration after administration resisted. Until Trump. He was convinced, some say manipulated, into believing he could win a war with Iran in 6 hours. A fantasy, a disaster waiting to happen. And yet, it became policy.
Now we step into a subject that forces us to confront the unraveling of American power, the consequences of endless war, and the dangerous escalation unfolding between the United States and Iran. This is the subject explored by journalist and author Chris Hedges, whose decades of reporting from war zones have shaped his understanding of empire, violence, and political decay. His argument is stark. The Iran conflict is not simply another foreign policy mistake. It is a symptom of an empire in decline.
This is not a comfortable exploration. It is not softened. It is not designed to protect anyone's political comfort. It is designed to reveal the machinery of war, the illusions of power, and the consequences that ripple far beyond Washington. Let's try to understand the foundation of Hedges' argument. For decades, the United States relied on military dominance to maintain global influence. Bases across continents, fleets in every ocean, intelligence networks reaching into every capital. But today, that dominance is cracking. The wars in Iraq and Afghanistan drained resources, shattered credibility, and exposed the limits of American force. The rise of China and Russia reshaped global power. Domestic polarization fractured political stability.
Into this fragile landscape entered Trump's escalating conflict with Iran. Hedges argues that this confrontation was not strategic, not calculated, not grounded in diplomacy. It was driven by political desperation, ideological fantasy, and the illusion that military force could restore American supremacy. An empire accustomed to dominance cannot tolerate defiance. Iran's refusal to submit became a challenge to American mythology, a reminder that military power no longer guarantees obedience.
Sanctions tightened, diplomats sidelined, nuclear agreements abandoned, assassinations carried out, threats exchanged. The United States positioned itself as both victim and enforcer, claiming Iran was the source of instability while dismantling every mechanism designed to prevent conflict. The Iran crisis was not isolated. It was part of a pattern. When American influence weakens, American militarism intensifies.
Let's try to understand the deeper forces driving this escalation. Hedges points to the military-industrial complex, a system that profits from conflict and lobbies for perpetual war. Defense contractors, intelligence agencies, political donors, and media networks all benefit from tension. War becomes not a last resort, but a business model. In this system, Iran is not an enemy. It is an opportunity. The rhetoric of threat fuels budgets. The narrative of security justifies expansion. The promise of victory distracts from domestic collapse.
But what does victory mean when the empire itself is crumbling? What does security mean when endless war creates endless instability?
Foreign conflict mirrors domestic decay. infrastructure crumbles, inequality rises, healthcare collapses, education deteriorates, political institutions lose legitimacy. The empire turns outward because it cannot face its own failures. War becomes a distraction, a performance, a way to manufacture unity in a fractured nation. But the cost is immense. Resources diverted from social needs, veterans abandoned, civil liberties eroded, public trust destroyed. The empire fights abroad while falling apart at home.
Let's try to understand Iran's role in this shifting landscape. Iran is not a global empire. It is a regional force with alliances, influence, and resilience. It has survived sanctions, war, isolation, and political pressure for decades. It has built networks across Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, and Yemen. It has adapted to every attempt to weaken it. Confronting Iran is not a show of strength. It is a sign of weakness. It reveals that the United States cannot tolerate a regional actor that refuses to submit. It reveals that American power is no longer unquestioned. It reveals that the empire is struggling to maintain control in a world that has moved on.
Iran's resistance is not the cause of American decline. It is the evidence of it. Now, let's see how this conflict reshapes the world. Allies distance themselves. Rivals exploit the chaos. Global markets destabilize. Diplomatic alliances fracture. The United States becomes unpredictable, unreliable, and increasingly isolated. The empire that once set the rules now breaks them. The empire that once enforced stability now generates instability. Trump's Iran war accelerates this decline. It exposes the empire's desperation. It reveals the limits of military power. It undermines global trust. It pushes the world toward new alignments that no longer revolve around Washington. Today, we confront a world where American dominance is no longer guaranteed. The Iran conflict is not simply a geopolitical crisis. It is a mirror. It reflects the fragility of American power, the consequences of endless war, and the dangers of political desperation. It reveals an empire that cannot adapt, cannot reflect, and cannot accept decline. Hedges warns that empires rarely fall quietly. They lash out. They escalate. They cling to illusions of greatness. They mistake violence for strength. They mistake fear for control. Today, we step into that warning. Today, we examine the consequences. Today, we confront the uncomfortable truth that Trump's Iran war is not bringing stability. It is bringing collapse. This is not just a foreign policy failure. It is a turning point. It is a reckoning. It is the moment when the empire reveals its own fragility.
Arlene Russell here, speaking from the heart of the WZBC studios at Boston College. This is This Week in Palestine, traveling through the signal of Truth and Justice Radio, a place where difficult truths are confronted head-on and where the weight of history meets the demands of the present moment with unmistakable force.
Now, we step into a subject that feels almost unbelievable at first glance. A subject wrapped in secrecy, rumor, geopolitical shockwaves, and media narratives that ignite entire regions. A subject claiming that billions of dollars and tons of gold have moved from the Gulf to Iran, and that Iran has now struck a blow against American military power. Whether these claims are true, exaggerated, or weaponized, they reveal something deeper, a region shifting beneath our feet. Let's reveal the machinery of power, the illusions of stability, and the consequences that ripple across the Middle East today. We start by trying to understand how this story began.
A video circulates online. A headline explodes across Arabic media. $7 billion and 2 tons of gold from the UAE arrive in Iran. The claim is shocking. It suggests a secret transaction, a geopolitical pivot, a quiet deal between two states that publicly maintain distance and suspicion. It suggests that the Gulf, long aligned with Washington, may be recalibrating its alliances. But today, we must ask, is this a financial transaction, a political message, a regional realignment, or a media narrative designed to provoke? Let's see what this claim represents, regardless of its factual accuracy. The Middle East is entering a new era. Gulf states are reassessing their alliances. Iran is expanding its influence. The United States is struggling to maintain dominance. Israel is facing unprecedented regional isolation. And global powers like China and Russia are stepping into the vacuum. In this landscape, even rumors carry weight. Even unverified claims shape public perception. Even sensational headlines become tools of pressure. Now, let's try to understand why a story about gold matters. Gold is not just wealth. Gold is sovereignty. Gold is leverage. Gold is independence from the dollar, from sanctions, from Western financial control. If a Gulf state were to transfer gold to Iran, it would signal a break from American pressure. It would signal a willingness to defy Washington's sanctions regime. It would signal a shift in regional loyalty. Even if the story is exaggerated, the fact that it resonates reveals a deeper truth. The region no longer trusts American dominance. Today, we confront the reality that the Middle East is no longer shaped by Washington's decisions alone. Now, let's see how Iran fits into this shifting landscape. Iran has survived decades of sanctions, isolation, and military threats. It has built networks across Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, and Yemen. It has developed military capabilities that challenge American presence in the Gulf. It has positioned itself as a regional power that cannot be ignored. And then comes the second part of the claim. Iran drops a quarter of America's fleet. This is not verified. This is not confirmed by any official source. But the narrative itself reveals something important. It reveals the fear of American decline. It reveals the hope of regional resistance. It reveals the desperation of those who want to see the empire weakened. It reveals the anxiety of those who depend on American protection. Today, we must ask, why does this narrative resonate? Why does the idea of American vulnerability spread so quickly? Why does the region believe that the empire can fall? Let's try to understand the deeper forces at play. The United States is overstretched. Its wars in Iraq and Afghanistan drained resources and credibility. Its confrontation with China divides attention. Its domestic polarization weakens leadership. Its alliances are fraying. Its military presence in the Middle East is increasingly costly and increasingly unwelcome. In this environment, even the suggestion of a military setback becomes symbolic. It becomes a metaphor for decline. It becomes a narrative of resistance. It becomes a story that the region tells itself to make sense of shifting power. But the question is how this connects to the Gulf. For decades, Gulf states relied on American protection. They aligned with Washington's policies. They opposed Iran. They supported sanctions. They funded proxy conflicts. But today, the Gulf is recalibrating. Saudi Arabia is negotiating with Iran. The UAE is expanding trade with Tehran. Qatar maintains open channels. Oman mediates. China brokers deals. Russia expands influence. The region is no longer divided into pro-America and pro-Iran. It is divided into states seeking stability and states seeking dominance. In this landscape, even a rumor of gold becomes a symbol of shifting alliances. Now, let's try to understand the psychological dimension. The Middle East is a region where narratives matter as much as facts, where symbolism shapes politics, where rumors become tools, where media becomes a battlefield. A story about gold is not just about wealth. It is about betrayal. It is about loyalty. It is about fear. It is about hope. It is about the collapse of old alliances and the birth of new ones. A story about Iran striking American forces is not just about military power. It is about resistance. It is about pride. It is about the desire to see the empire humbled. Narratives shape geopolitics as much as armies do. Now, let's see how this story fits into the broader collapse of American influence. The United States is no longer the unquestioned power of the Middle East. Its allies are drifting. Its enemies are emboldened. Its military presence is challenged. Its economic leverage is weakening. Its political credibility is damaged. The Iran conflict is not simply a confrontation. It is a mirror. It reflects the fragility of American power. It reflects the consequences of endless war. It reflects the dangers of political desperation. And the gold story, whether true or exaggerated, becomes part of that mirror. It becomes a symbol of a region that no longer fears Washington. It becomes a symbol of states seeking independence. It becomes a symbol of alliances shifting away from the West. Now, let's try to understand what comes next. The Middle East is entering a new era, an era where American dominance is no longer guaranteed, an era where Iran is a central player, an era where Gulf states seek autonomy, an era where China and Russia expand influence, an era where narratives shape reality. Stepping into this new era means entering a landscape where every assumption is collapsing, every alliance is shifting, and every narrative is being rewritten in real time. Claims rise, fall, collide, and reshape the way the region understands itself. The gold, the power plays, the military posturing, the whispered deals, none of it stands alone. Each piece is part of a larger transformation. We examine the claims. We trace the fault lines. We face the contradictions that have been buried under decades of propaganda and geopolitical theater. We look directly at the fear, the anger, the history, and the shifting alliances that define the Middle East at this moment.
This is not just a story about gold. It is not just a story about Iran. It is not just a story about America. It is the story of a region rewriting its future, not quietly, not politely, but through upheaval, recalibration, and the collapse of old certainties. The ground is moving, and every actor is scrambling to find balance on a stage that no longer follows the script written for it. Unfortunately, the United States is falling off that stage because of a stupid decision, a war with Iran. You're hearing the voice of Arlene Russell from the WZBC studios at Boston College. Welcome to This Week in Palestine, brought to you by Truth and Justice Radio, a space where layered realities are explored with care and where the past and present meet in conversations that refuse to look away. Know Senator Chris Murphy, a sharp-minded Democrat from Connecticut, known for his relentless focus on foreign policy, his criticism of endless war, and his willingness to confront misinformation head-on. He is one of the few voices in Washington who consistently challenges the narratives that push America toward conflict. His speeches are direct, unfiltered, and often uncomfortable for those who rely on political theater instead of facts. Have you heard his latest speech yet? If not, let me tell you all about it. Now, we step into a subject that exposes the machinery of American foreign policy, the myths surrounding the Iran nuclear deal, and the political storm unleashed by Donald Trump's recent claims. It is a subject that forces us to examine how narratives are weaponized, how truth is bent, and how misinformation becomes a tool of power. Senator Murphy's speech begins with a simple message. Don't believe it. He warns Americans that Trump's statements about the Iran deal are not just inaccurate, they are dangerous. They distort history, mislead the public, and push the country toward another unnecessary confrontation in the Middle East. Let's try to understand what Murphy is responding to. Trump recently claimed that Iran was on the verge of collapse before he took office, that the nuclear deal was the worst agreement ever made, and that his administration saved America by withdrawing from it. Murphy calls these claims fiction. He argues that Trump is rewriting history to justify reckless decisions that destabilize the region. Now, let's see what the Iran deal actually was. The Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the JCPOA, was a multilateral agreement designed to limit Iran's nuclear capabilities in exchange for sanctions relief. It was not perfect, but according to international inspectors, Iran complied with its obligations. The deal reduced the risk of nuclear escalation and opened channels for diplomacy.
Murphy argues that Trump's withdrawal from the deal did not make America safer. It made Iran stronger. It accelerated Iran's nuclear program. It isolated the United States from its allies. It empowered hardliners in Tehran, and it pushed the region closer to conflict. This is where Murphy's speech becomes more urgent. He explains that Trump's narrative, that Iran was collapsing, that America held all the leverage, that withdrawal was a masterstroke, is not supported by evidence. It is political storytelling. It is myth-making. It is a performance designed to rally supporters and distract from the consequences of failed policy. Let's try to understand why this matters now.
The Middle East is shifting. Iran is expanding its influence. Israel is facing regional isolation. Gulf states are recalibrating their alliances. China and Russia are stepping into the vacuum left by American retreat. In this landscape, misinformation is not harmless. It shapes public opinion. It influences elections. It justifies military action. It becomes a tool for those who benefit from chaos. Murphy warns that Trump's claims about Iran are part of a larger pattern, a pattern where political leaders distort reality to justify aggressive foreign policy. He argues that this pattern has cost American lives, destabilized entire regions, and weakened America's global standing. Now, let's see how Murphy dismantles Trump's narrative. He points out that Iran was not collapsing before Trump took office. Its economy was strained, but stable. Its nuclear program was frozen. Its regional influence was contained. Its government was under pressure from moderates who supported diplomacy.
When Trump withdrew from the deal, everything changed. Iran restarted uranium enrichment. Iran expanded its military presence in Iraq and Syria. Iran strengthened ties with Russia and China. Iran gained leverage it did not previously have. Murphy argues that Trump's decision was not a strategic victory. It was a geopolitical gift to Iran. Let's try to understand the political dimension. Murphy says Trump's claims are designed to rewrite history before the next election cycle. They are crafted to portray strength, even when the results show weakness. They are meant to create a narrative where Trump alone can fix the Middle East, even though his policies intensified instability. Murphy's speech is not just a critique. It is a warning. He warns that misinformation about Iran could lead America into another war, a war based not on facts, but on political theater. He warns that the public must be vigilant, must question narratives, must demand evidence. He warns that foreign policy cannot be built on slogans. Now let's see how this connects to the broader collapse of American credibility. Murphy argues that Trump's Iran policy damaged America's relationships with Europe, undermined international agreements, and signaled to the world that the United States could no longer be trusted to honor its commitments. Allies distanced themselves. Rivals exploited the chaos. The global balance shifted.
He explains that when America abandons diplomacy, it abandons leadership. When America embraces misinformation, it embraces decline. When America chooses confrontation over negotiation, it chooses instability. Murphy's speech becomes a reflection on empire. He suggests that America's greatest threat is not Iran. It is the erosion of truth. It is the weaponization of narrative. It is the collapse of responsible governance. Let's try to understand the emotional weight of his message. Murphy speaks with urgency because he has seen the consequences of war. He has visited conflict zones. He has met families torn apart by violence. He has watched the cost of political decisions unfold in real time. His message is simple. America cannot afford another war built on lies. Now, let's see where this leaves us. Trump's claims about Iran are part of a larger struggle over truth. Murphy's speech is part of a larger effort to defend it. The region is part of a larger transformation that cannot be understood through slogans. This is not just a story about Iran. It is not just a story about Trump. It is not just a story about American politics.
It is a story about the battle between narrative and reality. It is a story about the consequences of misinformation. It is a story about a nation deciding whether it will repeat the mistakes of the past or confront them. I do invite you to listen to Senator Murphy's speech, which you can find on YouTube under the title of Don't Believe It, Chris Murphy Blasts Trump Over Iran Deal Claims, World News, U.S. News. You will hear more things that I didn't say today. You will hear how Trump enriched himself and his kids by billions.
Shh, you didn't hear this from me.
Arlene Russell reporting from the WZBC studios at Boston College. This is This Week in Palestine, carried by Truth and Justice Radio, the broadcast that doesn't flinch from complexity, that pushes into the hard questions, and where the echoes of history collide with the pressure of the present. Now let's look at a moment that has shaken the region, a warning issued from Ankara that echoes across capitals, ministries, and military bases, a warning directed at Israel, delivered with a tone the world has not heard from Turkey in years, a warning framed not as diplomacy, not as negotiation, but as Islamic action if the assault on Gaza continues. The headline spreads, enough is enough. Turkey threatens Israel with Islamic action after the Mecca Pact. Now, let's try to understand what this means. This is not just a political statement. It is not just a diplomatic protest. It is not just another speech in a long list of condemnations. It is a signal, a shift, a recalibration of regional power. A moment where Turkey positions itself not only as a state, but as a guardian of a broader Islamic identity. And it begins with Gaza. Gaza today is not simply a humanitarian catastrophe. It is a political earthquake. Every bomb dropped on Gaza shakes the region. Every civilian death reverberates through the Arab and Muslim world. Every destroyed home becomes a symbol of injustice that no government can ignore. Israel continues its military campaign, insisting it is fighting Hamas. But the scale of destruction in Gaza has triggered outrage far beyond the borders of Palestine.
Turkey steps forward, not quietly, not cautiously, but with a declaration that the Islamic world must act. How did this escalation unfold? Of course, the Mecca Pact, which is a turning point. The Mecca Pact is not a treaty in the traditional sense. It is a symbolic alignment, a moment where Muslim nations gather under one banner, one cause, one shared outrage. It is a pact of solidarity, a pact of identity, a pact of responsibility. Turkey interprets this pact as a mandate to defend Gaza, a mandate to confront Israel politically, a mandate to pressure the West, a mandate to reshape the regional balance. The message from Ankara is clear. If Gaza continues to burn, the Islamic world cannot remain silent. This is not a call for war. It is a call for unity, a call for leverage, a call for action that transcends borders. Let's try to understand why Turkey is taking this position now.
Turkey is not acting out of sudden emotion. It is acting out of strategy. For years, Turkey balanced its relationship with Israel, the United States, and the Arab world. It positioned itself as a mediator, a negotiator, a bridge between East and West. But Gaza has changed the equation. Turkey sees an opportunity and a responsibility, an opportunity to lead the Muslim world, an opportunity to challenge Israel's regional dominance, an opportunity to confront Western double standards, an opportunity to strengthen its influence across the Middle East. Turkey's warning is not only directed at Israel, it is directed at Washington. It is directed at Europe. It is directed at every state that has remained silent while Gaza suffers. Now, let's see how Israel responds. Israel dismisses Turkey's warning. It insists its military operations will continue. It frames Turkey's statements as political theater. It argues that Gaza is a battlefield against Hamas. But Israel cannot ignore the regional shift. Turkey is not alone. Public opinion across the Arab world is boiling. Governments are under pressure. Protests erupt in capitals. Diplomatic ties strain. Economic deals wobble. Israel faces not only military challenges, but political isolation. But how this isolation is forming?
The Mecca Pact becomes a rallying point. Nations that once hesitated now speak more boldly. Statements grow sharper. Demands grow louder. The pressure intensifies.
Turkey's warning becomes a catalyst. It signals that Gaza is no longer just a Palestinian issue. It is an Islamic issue, a regional issue, a global issue. This shift is not symbolic. It is strategic. But how this affects the balance of power? And is the United States caught in the middle? The United States finds itself in a difficult position. It supports Israel militarily and politically. It faces criticism from Muslim nations. It faces protests at home. It faces diplomatic strain abroad. It faces a narrative that its foreign policy is fueling instability. Turkey's warning complicates Washington's calculations. If Turkey mobilizes political pressure through the Islamic world, the United States must respond. If Turkey pushes for sanctions, alliances shift. If Turkey pushes for diplomatic isolation, Israel's position weakens. If Turkey pushes for economic pressure, markets react. The United States cannot ignore Turkey's influence. Let's try to understand how this pressure builds. Turkey's warning triggers reactions across the region.
Saudi Arabia recalculates. Qatar intensifies diplomacy. Jordan raises alarms. Egypt faces public pressure. Iran amplifies its rhetoric. Pakistan signals solidarity. Malaysia and Indonesia issue statements. North African nations join the chorus. The Mecca Pact becomes more than symbolism. It has become a political force. Israel faces a region that is no longer fragmented, no longer divided, no longer silent. Now, let's see how this affects Gaza itself, which is the heart of the storm. Gaza remains the center of this crisis. The destruction continues. The humanitarian suffering deepens. The political stakes rise. The regional anger intensifies. Turkey's warning is rooted in Gaza's suffering. It is a response to images that shock the world. It is a response to civilian casualties. It is a response to a crisis that has crossed every moral threshold. Turkey frames Gaza as a test of Islamic unity, a test of regional responsibility, a test of global conscience. The Middle East stands at a crossroads. One path leads to escalation. One path leads to diplomacy. One path leads to unity. One path leads to fragmentation.
Turkey's warning forces the region to choose. Will the Islamic world act collectively? Will Israel adjust its strategy? Will the United States reconsider its approach? Will Gaza finally receive protection? These questions define the next chapter of the region. Turkey's warning marks the beginning of a new era, an era where Islamic identity becomes political leverage, an era where Gaza shapes regional alliances, an era where Israel faces unprecedented pressure, an era where the United States must navigate shifting loyalties, an era where the Mecca Pact becomes a symbol of unity. The Mecca Pact is changing the future, a future shaped by anger, solidarity, diplomacy, and the demand for justice. A future where silence is no longer an option. A future where warnings carry weight. A future where Gaza becomes the catalyst for regional transformation. From the quiet glow of the WZBC studio at Boston College, this is Arlene Russell. You're tuned to This Week in Palestine, carried across the airwaves by Truth and Justice Radio, a place where complexity breathes, where history whispers through every segment, and where the urgency of today rises to meet it. So, what do we have now? Oh, okay. Now we step into a moment that has stunned both Washington and Tel Aviv, a moment where a phrase uttered by Donald Trump, a phrase no one expected, sent shockwaves through Israel's political establishment and ignited a firestorm among the settler movement. The headline spreads, horrific act of terror, and the question rises immediately, has Trump just turned on Israeli settlers? Trump, who has long been celebrated by Israeli settlers as their strongest ally, their champion, their protector, suddenly condemns an act committed by settlers as terrorism? The reaction is immediate. Confusion, outrage, shock. And beneath it all, a deeper question. What does this mean for the future of the U.S.-Israel alliance and for the settlers who have relied on American political backing for decades? The story begins with an attack,
an attack that even Israeli officials struggled to justify. Settlers stormed a Palestinian village, torching homes, destroying property, and injuring civilians. The images spread across social media. Flames rising from homes, families fleeing, masked men marching with rifles. Israeli human rights groups called it organized violence. Palestinians called it terror. And then Trump echoed that word.
Trump's condemnation forces Israel to confront something it has avoided for years, the growing radicalization within its own settler movement. These settlers are not simply residents of disputed land. They are armed groups acting independently of the state, sometimes against the state, sometimes beyond the state's control. Their attacks on Palestinians have increased in frequency and brutality. Their actions threaten Israel's diplomatic standing. Their violence undermines Israel's claim to moral legitimacy. Trump's statement exposes this contradiction. Israel's government must now decide whether to defend settlers or distance itself from them. Washington must decide whether to continue unconditional support or demand accountability. Palestinians must navigate a landscape where settler violence is finally being acknowledged by global powers. And settlers must confront the reality that their strongest ally has publicly condemned them. This moment reveals the fragility of the U.S.-Israel relationship. It reveals the cracks beneath the surface. It reveals the tension between Israel's political leadership and its settler base. It reveals the consequences of decades of unchecked settlement expansion.
Trump's condemnation also exposes a deeper truth. The United States is recalibrating its approach to the region. Washington is increasingly aware that settler violence threatens stability. It threatens diplomacy. It threatens American interests. It threatens the fragile balance between Israel and its neighbors. And it threatens the possibility of any future negotiation. The settlers, however, see things differently. They believe they are fulfilling a divine mandate. They believe they are defending Israel. They believe they are protecting Jewish identity. They believe they are fighting a war that the world refuses to acknowledge. Trump's statement feels like betrayal because it challenges their worldview. It challenges their legitimacy. It challenges their claim to moral righteousness. Israel's government is caught in the middle. If it condemns settlers, it risks political backlash. If it defends settlers, it risks international isolation. If it ignores settlers, it risks losing control. Trump's statement forces Israel to choose. The Palestinian perspective is equally important. For decades, Palestinians have endured settler violence with little international recognition. Their homes burned, their olive trees uprooted, their families attacked, their land seized, their complaints dismissed. Trump's condemnation, though unexpected, signals that the world is finally paying attention. It signals that settler violence is no longer invisible. It signals that Palestinians are not alone in calling it terror.
Okay, so now, this moment also reshapes regional politics. Arab states watch closely. Turkey, Qatar, Egypt, Jordan all see an opportunity. Iran sees leverage. Saudi Arabia sees pressure. The Gulf sees a shift in American tone. Trump's statement becomes more than a condemnation. It becomes a signal, a warning, a recalibration. Israel's government must now navigate a landscape where its closest ally has publicly criticized one of its most powerful domestic groups. Settlers must navigate a future where their actions may no longer be protected. Palestinians must navigate a moment where their suffering is finally acknowledged. And the region must navigate a shift in American rhetoric that could reshape alliances. This is not just a story about Trump. It is not just a story about settlers. It is not just a story about Gaza or the West Bank. It is a story about a region rewriting its future. A story about alliances shifting. A story about narratives collapsing. A story about power recalibrating. A story about truth breaking through political noise.
Trump's condemnation marks a turning point, a moment where the settler movement faces unprecedented scrutiny, a moment where Israel must confront its internal contradictions, a moment where Palestinians see a crack in the wall of silence, a moment where Washington signals that unconditional support has limits. This moment will not be forgotten. It will shape the next chapter of the conflict. It will shape the next chapter of diplomacy. It will shape the next chapter of regional politics.
Arlene Russell, speaking from the studios of WZBC at Boston College, brings you This Week in Palestine, carried across the airwaves by Truth and Justice Radio, where the conversation does not shy away from complexity and where the echoes of history meet the urgency of the present.
Now let's talk about how Trump humiliated with the catering truck incident and the panic behind the power. We begin with an image that feels almost surreal. A former American president, Donald Trump, reportedly hiding inside a catering truck during heightened tensions with Iran. Analysts say the moment is symbolic, not because of the truck itself, but because of what it represents. Fear, miscalculation, and the collapse of political bravado when reality arrives. It is a snapshot of a leader who built his political identity on strength, suddenly forced into concealment. Let's see how this moment became a headline. Let's try to understand why it matters. And let's explore what it reveals about American power, Iranian strategy, Gulf diplomacy, and the consequences that always land on Palestinians. The catering truck incident occurred during a period of intense U.S.-Iran tension. Iranian forces had increased readiness. American bases were on alert. Washington feared retaliation for previous strikes. In that moment, Trump's team reportedly moved him into a secure, disguised vehicle to avoid detection and reduce risk. The symbolism is powerful. A leader known for bravado suddenly shielded. A superpower acting like a vulnerable target. A confrontation revealing its true cost.
Today, this moment is used by critics to highlight the gap between political rhetoric and actual risk. Now, let's see how this fits into the larger confrontation. The catering truck incident did not happen in isolation. It happened in the middle of a cycle of escalation. Washington had launched strikes on Iranian-aligned positions. Iran had vowed retaliation. Regional actors braced for impact. Analysts explain that Trump's Iran policy relied heavily on pressure, sanctions, and threats. But pressure without strategy creates instability. Threats without diplomacy create fear. And fear without clarity creates chaos. This is the environment where leaders hide in catering trucks. Iran did not respond with panic. It responded with calculation. Officials signaled readiness, but avoided immediate escalation. Regional allies increased alertness. Communication channels remained open. Iran's strategy is built on patience, deterrence, and regional networks. It does not rely on sudden moves. It relies on long-term positioning. Let's try to understand what this means. Iran knows that confrontation with the U.S. is not a single event. It is a long game. A game where humiliation moments matter less than strategic outcomes.
Across the Gulf, governments watch the catering truck incident with concern, not because of the humiliation, but because of what it revealed. Washington is not as stable, predictable, or confident as it claims. This is why analysts believe Gulf states are quietly negotiating with Iran. Not publicly, not loudly, but carefully. These talks aim to reduce the risk of regional war, build communication channels, protect economic interests, and create a buffer against American unpredictability. If the Gulf is negotiating quietly with Iran, it signals a major shift. Regional actors are preparing for a future where Washington is not the sole power broker. And this shift has profound implications for Palestinians. Now let's try to understand the Palestinian angle. When Washington escalates against Iran, Israel feels emboldened. Regional attention shifts away from Palestinian rights. Humanitarian access becomes more restricted. Diplomatic pressure weakens. Occupation policies intensify. But when Gulf states negotiate quietly with Iran, the dynamic changes. A calmer region means more diplomatic space, more regional coordination, more regional pressure on Israel, more focus on Palestinian rights, and more opportunities for humanitarian access.
Palestinians live under the shadow of every regional shift. The catering truck moment may seem distant, but its consequences travel. CNN recently reported on the cost of America's foreign policy decisions. Their analysis highlights trillions spent on wars, weakened alliances, and domestic strain caused by prolonged conflict.
Trump's policies intensified these costs. Escalation without strategy, sanctions without diplomacy, threats without stability, military moves without long-term planning. The catering truck incident becomes a symbol of these contradictions. A leader who projected strength, forced into hiding by the consequences of his own decisions. Let's see why part of the Middle East chants death to America. It is not a literal call for violence against civilians. It is a political expression of anger toward decades of intervention, sanctions, and military actions that reshaped lives without consent. It reflects frustration with policies, not people. It reflects trauma, not ideology. Trump responded mockingly to this sentiment, asking, "Did you expect a thank you note?" This reply reveals the gap between how America sees itself and how the region experiences its power. It shows how misunderstanding fuels resentment and how dismissiveness deepens anger.
Now let's try to understand the courage of Francesca Albanese. As a UN Special Rapporteur, she has documented human rights violations against Palestinians with clarity and evidence. For this, she has faced political attacks, media campaigns, and pressure from governments that prefer silence over accountability. She continues her work because she believes human rights apply universally. She continues because silence is complicity. She continues because truth matters, even when the world sleeps. Her voice is a reminder that speaking about Palestine is not an act of defiance. It is an act of humanity. Now, we saw how a single moment, Trump hiding in a catering truck, reveals far more than humiliation. It reveals instability. It reveals fear. It reveals the consequences of policies built on pressure rather than strategy. We saw how Iran responds with calculation, how Gulf states negotiate quietly, how Palestinians feel every shift, how CNN's analysis exposes the cost of endless confrontation, how regional anger grows from lived experience, how Francesca Albanese stands firm in the face of pressure. We understand now that this was never just a story about a catering truck. It was about the man who climbed inside it. The man who vanished behind metal walls and plastic trays while chaos unfolded outside. The man who chose hiding over leading. And one question refuses to go away. Who did he leave behind? When he slipped into that truck, when the doors closed, when the Secret Service formed a wall around him, who remained exposed? Who stood in the open while he disappeared into the shadows? Who became the decoy? Did he leave his entire team out there? Did he leave his advisor standing in the line of danger? Is that why Caroline Leavitt walked out of the White House days later, her resignation wrapped in silence? The image is unforgettable. A president hiding in a food truck while his administration stands outside as bait. The symbolism writes itself. The leader protected. The team abandoned. The truck sealed shut. The danger left for everyone else. Enough said.
This is Arlene Russell. You're tuned to This Week in Palestine, carried across the airwaves by Truth and Justice Radio, broadcasting from the studios of WZBC at Boston College, a place where the signal doesn't just inform, it confronts, challenges, and refuses to look away. And just like that, we arrive at the final breaths of this week's broadcast. The slow dimming of a lantern, the quiet settling of truth after an hour that asked much of the heart. As you step back into your day, may you carry with you the questions that refuse to be buried, the courage that refuses to fade, and the curiosity that keeps truth alive in a world that works tirelessly to silence it. I'm Arlene Russell, your host and narrator. Sharing this hour with you has been an honor, an hour grounded in clarity, in dignity, in a solidarity that does not evaporate when the headlines shift or when the cameras turn away. If something you heard today unsettled you, challenged you, or cracked open a door you didn't know existed, and if you ever feel the pull to lend your own voice to this work, know that this space will always have room for you. You can reach us anytime at twippodcasts@gmail.com. To you, our listeners, thank you. Thank you for your time, your trust, your willingness to walk this difficult path beside us.
Your presence is the quiet proof that truth still matters, that memory still matters, that resistance still matters. If you missed any part of today's program, you can find us on every major platform: YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Podcast Index, iHeartRadio, Pocket Casts, Deezer, Overcast, Castro, Podchaser, Castbox, Player FM, Good Pods, and True Fans.
You can also explore our full archive on radio4all.net and archive.org. Just search This Week in Palestine, or TWIP, and look for the image of the little girl raising her hands in the victory sign. We're also featured on Million Podcasts, a platform uplifting Arab American creators and helping listeners discover new voices. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. We'll return next week. Until then, take care, stay grounded, stay steadfast. This is This Week in Palestine. This is occupied land. This is Palestine. And the call for freedom continues. Free Palestine, from the river to the sea. Falastin Hurrah.